Hello, welcome to Roots Runners Rhizomes, Health and Healing from the Underground. I'm Sarah Faulkner. Our regular co-host Lauren Jambroni can't be here with us today. This show is dedicated to exploring healing and wellness from a liberatory perspective, critiquing top-down systems and institutions. Instead, we look up and around from below and alongside the way roots and rhizomes grew. Our show has not been evaluated by the FDA or any official licensing body, and our intention is not to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. By providing discussion, critique, and information from a variety of viewpoints, we hope you'll feel more empowered, informed, and resourced as you explore your own options for self-care and working with different practitioners and providers. Today, we have in the studio with us Emery Mort. Welcome to the show, Emery.
Thank you, Sarah.
How's it going?
It's going well.
I've met Emery in the past year or so, and he's going to be on the show today. I'd like to interview him about something that he told me about. I don't know much about it myself, and it sounds fascinating. It's called the Bengston Method. So before we get into that, Emery, can you tell us a little bit about where you're from and maybe sort of what you've been interested in and how that led you to the Bengston Method?
All right, I'd be happy to. I'm from Ghent, New York. I grew up on Gallagher Stud Farm, which is right off of 9H near Kinderhook. So I'm from this area, and I went away to college. I studied biological engineering, so I have a background in the sciences and also athletics. I was a runner. So I got introduced to the Bengston Method because I started studying. Basically, my rule was I started studying stuff that was really interesting to me.
Good rule.
I came across the Bengston Method in September, I believe, because Bengston put out a book called The Energy Cure, and it was reviewed on a web magazine called Reality Sandwich that I often read, and I just was struck by how fascinating this guy's research and experience sounded. So I got the book, I got his audio course, and since then I've been learning about the Bengston Method, and as I learn about lots of other stuff, too. And
kind Can of you tell us a little bit about some of that other stuff that you were looking at, say, on Reality Sandwich, which some of our listeners might not know what that is? Can you tell us a little bit about that and the types of things that they have on their site?
Sure. It's a pretty radical site. The tagline is Evolving Consciousness Bite by Bite. I think I got that right.
Yeah, I think so.
I actually write, as a volunteer, I write some news shorts for them. So I guess if we just get into Reality Sandwich, they get into, let's say, anomalous things that happen in reality and put it out there. So, for example, I've taken some online courses with them studying things like crop circles and shamanic healing and initiation and things like this. So they have lots of interesting stuff on there. And I've actually gone to some retreats of theirs as well and met some of the people that are involved with this sort of alternative world of anomalous things. But my goal and their goal, I think, to some extent, is to bring these sort of ignored parts of reality into our understanding and into our daily existence in an attempt to hopefully, I don't know, make our existence, make reality a little better.
<I guess. laughs> Great. And like you said, you have a background in science, and Dr. Bengston is himself also, is he a mathematician? Is that what is? Tell us a little bit about William Bengston and his method.
Okay. William Bengston is a college professor at St. Joseph's College, which is on Long Island. And his degree is in sociology. He has a PhD in sociology, but he does a lot of work with statistics as well.
Statistics.
So that's his day job. And but early on, let's say after he graduated from college, he met this man who had some psychic abilities. And Dr. Bengston says he's always been kind of interested in like ESP type things. So when he met this guy, he was interested, but he was also very skeptical. But over time, he saw this guy do a lot of interesting things, some involving healing and in a clinical setting. So people would come to him with problems, and the problems sometimes would go away kind of mysteriously. And Bengston's real dream became I want to get this into a lab. I want to get data. I want to research this. And so over the course of a few decades, he's done that. So he's maybe around 60 years old. I'm not sure. So just to give the viewers an idea, this is a guy who's been doing this for quite a while.
Right. Do you know approximately when he came upon this sort of psychic healer? 30 years ago, maybe? Or
yeah, over 30 years ago. I think in the early to mid 70s. Mm-hmm. As he says, it was before the new age.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So he met this, and the healer's name is, do you remember?
Bennett Mayrick.
Bennett Mayrick. So Bennett Mayrick, Bengston kind of is coming from a statistical scientific background, meets this guy who's doing things that I guess Bengston can't quite understand how they work. Is that what was fascinating him?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So he met this guy one day outside of a pool he was lifeguarding at. Mm-hmm. Bengston was like a record-setting swimmer in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And he was lifeguarding at a pool one day after he graduated from college, and he met this guy who people were saying, oh, this guy says he's a psychic. And so Bengston's like, all right, I got to check this guy out. And as the story goes, the guy said, pick a cloud, I'll make it disappear. And so Bengston was like, okay, what institution did he get let out of? But he picked a cloud, watched the Mayrick in astonishment, and looked back at the cloud, and it was gone. And this was the start of Dr. Bengston's kind of fascination with what was going on, because he couldn't explain it away.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't mean he wanted to ignore it.
Right.
Instead, he wanted to keep going and see what this was about. So ultimately, this led to him setting up experiments in now a whole number of universities and med schools.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these experiments are designed to test what has become his sort of method of healing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about what kinds of things did he study. These were studies with animals or people, or mm-hmm. what kinds of things did he study?
Yes, so he has research that's been published in peer-reviewed journals, such as the Journal for Scientific Exploration.
Mm-hmm.
So people can actually check out his research. But the original thing he had planned, he actually had this offered to him by someone who witnessed Mayrick doing some healing.
Mm-hmm.
He said, oh, do you want to get this in the lab? Because I have some people who owe me some favors and I think I can get you some lab space. So Bengston was really excited by this. And basically they got a whole bunch of stock mice that from Jackson Lab.
Mm-hmm.
So these are almost, they're not exactly clones, but they're very close to clones.
Mm-hmm.
Then inject them with a standard form of a standard strain of cancer.
Uh-huh.
So they were injected with basically mouse mammary cancer.
Uh-huh.
And the protocol for the healing was set up. There's a test group and there's a control group of mice.
Mm-hmm.
And the control group was set up in another building.
Mm-hmm.
And right when they were getting ready to start this, Mayrick, the original healer, backed out.
Oh.
Yeah. And this led to basically ended up leading to a split between Dr. Bengston and Mayrick.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mayrick Dr. Bengston became the healer in the experiment.
And did he feel himself like that's very interesting. He had mm-hmm. planned to have Mayrick do the mm-hmm. healing. And how was this for him? I'm just going to try it myself. Or had he been practicing already, or he felt he was competent enough to...
I'm a little unclear about the chronological details.
Okay.
But I will say my perception of it is this, that before that, he had been questioning Bennett Mayrick for a long time about, how are you doing this? What are you doing? Because Mayrick had a lot of strange abilities. Like, he would have, if he had a check from someone in his mm-hmm. pocket, he might be able to tell you something about that person's life without mm-hmm. even thinking. So he mm-hmm. had these kind of psychic abilities that were just mm-hmm. coming to him for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
Bengston's contribution in all this is that he asked a lot of annoying questions. Mm-hmm. So over and over he would try to get Mayrick to explain why, mm-hmm. how, these types of things. And so I think before Bengston became sort of, to his chagrin, the healer in the experiment, he had been able to produce healing effects on people himself. Mm-hmm. And he and Mayrick had kind of worked out a sort of template for how to teach healing. Mm-hmm. Because Bengtsson was like, fine, if one person can do it, that's great. But if we can't teach this to other people, then okay, we got to move on. Like, mm-hmm. it's just one mm-hmm. anomalous person. Mm-hmm. So
that's what
the
led
history
up to
as
the
far as I understand
before the
it.
Clinical trial. So the yeah. in this clinic, this first clinical trial, which just sort of sounds like a classical clinical trial, there mm-hmm. were the what was being tested was the ability of the Bengtsson, now what we call the Bengtsson method, mm-hmm. to heal cancer in mice. So how did that go?
Okay, so these are mice that had this strain of mice had been experimented upon in like thousands and thousands of research papers. So mm-hmm. it's well documented. Control mice that receive that are injected with this cancer for decades and in thousands of reports had, you know, the world record mouse had lived for, I think, 27 days.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very tight model. Like the median lived 20 days.
Mm-hmm.
They usually start dying about 13 days in.
Wow.
So it's very tight model. So mm-hmm. statisticians like Bengtsson love this.
Right.
So he gets the mice and mm-hmm. what he does is sit down with their cage and put his hands around their cage
mm-hmm.
and does his method. And he tells the story. It's a really interesting story of how it all happened. But basically the mice have, they develop like an abscess
mm-hmm.
and like the tumor kind of like explodes or I don't know what the right word is, but it kind of implodes. So mm-hmm. the tumor still exists for a while, but then it implodes and then the mice get better.
Wow.
Or got better. So all of the experimental mice got better.
Wow.
Yeah. And here's what get better means. I'll be more specific. Yeah. I'll be more scientific. The mice went on to live their full 2-year lifespan.
2 years, as yeah. opposed to the strain of this cancer that's been injected, mice from this same variety
right.
were only living maximum 27 days.
Right, right. So they went on to
wow.
live their full lifespan. And there's a number of things I could go into here, but mm-hmm. one of the most interesting is that the control mice,
mm-hmm.
in other words, the mice that Bengtsson didn't literally physically treat,
mm-hmm.
that were in another building,
mm-hmm.
they also eventually healed and lived. The majority of the control mice in these experiments live as well.
Do you know how proximal that other building was to where, and I'm just saying this because, you know, there are many energy healers, and I understand Bengtsson doesn't necessarily like that term. I'm not so fond of it sometimes either.
Mm-hmm.
But we're dealing with quantum physics, which is kind of often beyond our ordinary concepts of time and space. So, you know, the study was designed around sort of ideas of contagion, perhaps, or when we deal with pathogens and drugs, maybe radiation, there are distances that we think of as, you know, enough to safeguard exposure. But it sounds like they were, in essence, being exposed to the healing method unintentionally, correct?
That sounds good. Yeah. Basically, he would put, there's a number of things I could say, but he puts his hands on the cage,
mm-hmm.
and while they're sick, while they're dying,
mm-hmm.
they will gravitate towards his left hand, which is the hand where, you know, I actually have learned the Bengtsson method and practice
mm-hmm.
it, not really so much on people, but just in my day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm.
And the left hand is kind of the healing hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll gravitate to the left hand. But once they're well, they don't care that his hands are there. They don't pay any attention to him. So it's almost like responding to a need. Like you said, they don't...
Because the mice are running free in the cage.
Yeah,
and
they're
then
free
they,
in
they
the
come
cage.
Come over to where his hands are.
That's
to
right.
receive
That's
the...
That's right. And he's
healing.
Done tests with this. He's like spun the cages around
uh-huh.
randomly. So it's not like they're going to the north. Or it's like they go to the left hand.
Right,
even.
Right.
So another thing that happens is the in experiments that were done after this, so he's done these experiments now for quite a while, the mice would, when they were reinjected with the same cancer, they
mm-hmm.
would actually be immune to the cancer. That's
oh,
what the
wow.
results show.
Wow.
So this is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's if you were killing the cancer,
mm-hmm.
you would expect that if it were to be reinjected, well, then it might grow again in
mm-hmm.
the mice. But this indicates something else might be going on, like you're establishing some sort of higher immune activity or ability that actually lasts with the organism
right
through its lifetime.
Right. That's amazing. Yeah. Now let's get into some of the conditions that Bengston has treated successfully. It's very interesting to me. Sounds like he can cure cancer, but warts are a little problematic. Isn't that right? what are some things he's had success with? And then there are a couple things I think that you've told me it doesn't seem to affect much.
Right. So one of the conditions that Bengston says his method will not work on is the appearance of warts. And this is kind of interesting because a lot of people in alternative and complementary healing have no problem getting rid of warts. You know, they say just slap a book on it or do some sort of auto suggestion technique. Mm-hmm. Like warts seem to be highly responsive to.
When I was a young girl, I did something involving a potato in a graveyard and it didn't work, but that was what I was told to
right,
do.
Right, and these are the types of things that actually like PhDs and MDs will say you can do for warts. Mm-hmm. But Bengston's actually had people who can heal warts and then learn his method and then can't heal warts anymore.
but they can heal cancer. So.
Right, so he says, I went to his workshop and met him back in June, and he gave us 7 bullet points, and the bullet point that he was most confident about was cancer can be cured.
Wow.
And he says to a lot of people, cancer is the big C, but to him, cancer is boring to him. He's seen mm-hmm. it so many times, clinical research, it's the big W for warts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Other things it's worked on are gangrene.
Wow.
He has seen a spontaneous remission of gangrene, mm-hmm. which, according to the literature, and this is coming from him, you know, I haven't scoured all the literature, so if people want to do more research, I'll provide some places where they can do that. But
great.
Gangrene has spontaneously remitted.
Mm-hmm.
Things as varied as depression, mm-hmm. also chronic pain mm-hmm. in backs, migraines.
And how quickly are we talking about some of these things? Is this one treatment or a series of treatments?
And that's where more research needs uh-huh. to be done. But like, for example, with these mice, they don't get better right away. Mm-hmm. It takes them days, weeks, et cetera, to get better.
Mm-hmm.
So some people who are listening to this show, and this is an example I use, but you might have heard of experts in like Qigong healing.
Mm-hmm.
There are reports of them, like someone will have a tumor and they will like do their highly disciplined method and the tumor will like literally evaporate
right.
before your eyes. This is unusual, let's say, with the Bengston method.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a back injury from swimming, and one day, this is when he had just started with Mayrick, and he started to see that Mayrick was healing people. He kind of like suggested almost with his mind that like, oh, I'm such an idiot. Why don't I have him heal my back? And immediately Mayrick goes, oh, my back. What's wrong? And
Mayrick, as the role of healer, took on Bengston's pain.
That's right. And mm-hmm. I can get into some of my experiences with that as well.
I'd like to do that.
But after that, Bengston's back pain went away, and he had had it for years. And he said it's never come back. And he said, so, you know, someone could tell me that it's like a hysterical repression of symptoms. He's like, fine, mm-hmm. it might be. But either way, it's gone, and mm-hmm. I'm happy. And he said, but this is rare. It's not usual that it would be that quick mm-hmm. or that it would be one treatment. He has some guidelines in terms of what you can expect. For example, someone who is older in age and has mm-hmm. a lot of health problems is probably less likely to get better quickly versus a young person, let's say a teenager with an otherwise healthy body mm-hmm. who has maybe a really aggressive form of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also guidelines with like different types of illnesses. So he says if you have an aggressive form of cancer, aggressive forms of cancer treated with his technique seem to go away as fast as they're coming in.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Whereas things that are coming in more slowly, think of something like prostate cancer that develops mm-hmm. over decades, might take decades of, or as he says, like years of treatment to go away. If it's mm-hmm. trickling in, it'll trickle out. Mm-hmm. If it's coming in like a freight train, it'll go out like a freight train.
Mm-hmm.
So these are just very interesting observations.
So people are continuing to work with this method and study it, and hopefully we'll have some more answers about more precise treatment protocols in the future. And you yourself are one of the people who's begun to study it. Can you briefly describe what the treatment method is to learn and do? And I'll also just say, Bengston says anyone can learn this. It's not, you know, sometimes we hear about energy healers and, you know, there's ideas about perhaps people having to have a natural gift or a transmission from an attuned master or blah, blah, blah. Bengston's very, you know, it's anyone can do it, right?
Yes, with the caveat that he does say it's very difficult to learn. So it takes a lot of practice.
Right.
So he says, basically with his method, it's kind of like, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. And he right. actually says the same thing with his technique. And I found that to be the case. I've been working on it now for almost a year. And I find if I don't kind of do upkeep on mm-hmm. my practice, then it goes away. So it's not like I just... you know, you spontaneously get it transmitted to you, right?
Right.
And I've met him, and I've met him a few times and asked him a lot of questions. So it's not like I haven't been around him or anything like that. But
mm-hmm.
but yeah, it definitely wasn't like, oh, now I'm a master of the Bengston method at all.
Right. So how do you do it?
Okay. So to do it, one starts by making a list of, let's say, 20 or more things. Mm-hmm.
And the number's not important?
Well, it's important in that it be more than like 3 or 4 or 5.
Okay.
A pretty good number of things or experiences that one that you would like to have. And he says selfishly.
Mm-hmm.
He says it's important to be selfish. And what that kind of means is not to be putting things on your list because your parents want you to do it, or your
mm-hmm.
your team wants you to do it, or
mm-hmm.
whatever. It's important that it be individual to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Very immediate things, like, are there any you could share that wouldn't be?
Sure, it might be like if you don't have a bike, you mm-hmm. know, and you really want a bike, you could put a bike on the list. It
uh-huh.
could be very simple things. If you want to have a certain haircut, you might have an image of yourself with a haircut.
Uh-huh.
If you want to, if you really, really, really want to go to Maui and climb the volcano, you could have an image of you on the top of the volcano. So these images are not a series of steps to get somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
They are an image of the place you want to be.
Like attainment, so if I want to write state of attainment.
Right. If I want to write a book and I want a lot of people to read it, I might mm-hmm. have a image of me reading the New York Times with mm-hmm. my book being on the bestseller list,
mm-hmm.
for example. So mm-hmm. it could be big things, but it could also be small things,
mm-hmm.
like I'd like to have a Swiss Army knife. Or
right.
The idea is that
I'll give you one of those, Emery.
The idea is that they be specific,
uh-huh.
that there be many of them.
Uh-huh.
And it's not like that you're making like a movie of like all steps to get somewhere.
Uh-huh.
So
you have this list.
Yeah, so you have this list, and... then you sit down with each image and you basically sit with the image and like create it in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be like an image. It could be a 360 degree
mm-hmm.
touch, smell, taste, everything. You experience each image and you kind of revel in the experience for, he says, like you can think of like 10 to 15 minutes of like focused attention of like creating the image, so that if someone were to ask you what your image is, you would immediately be able to sort of re-experience it.
Mm-hmm. It's,
okay, you do that, and then you basically, over time, set up a technique by which you can cycle these images through your head or your body
mm-hmm.
quickly.
And this is called cycling.
And this is eventually called cycling. And to get to cycling, you do a lot of drilling. So you do, like, one at a time. Like
mm-hmm.
think of a beating drum, like boom, boom,
mm-hmm.
boom. One image after another after another. And then you get to the point where you maybe set them up on some sort of mental setup, like a movie
mm-hmm.
projector, like or a film strip,
mm-hmm.
where you have one image after another. And then it's like picture a film strip with 30 distinct images on it and a drum hit, boom. You cycle through all of them in boom,
mm-hmm.
boom, 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 boom. And So
you accelerate it.
Yeah. So every time you hear a boom, you're like cycling through, let's say, 30 images.
Wow.
So the idea is to eventually turn it over from the conscious brain, and our conscious brain can, mm-hmm. you know, I can't cycle through 200 images a second consciously, but it's sort of like you train yourself mm-hmm. to like turn it over to the part of your body, let's say, that digests your food while we're sitting here talking.
Right, that's right.
So that part of our body is doing a whole lot of stuff that we have no conscious awareness of.
Right.
And no, we shouldn't be controlling it. So eventually, the idea is to get to the point where you can actually feel this happening. You can feel the cycling going on, and you know you've set up the technique, and this takes hours and hours and hours. You know you've set up the technique so that, okay, I'm cycling now. And then you start walking around in your daily life, and when you experience emotion, mm-hmm. emotion drives the cycling. So it could be someone scares me as I turn a corner and I get frightened. Well, if you're like a master cycler, you just kind of cycled with that fright, let's say. Or if someone makes you laugh really, really authentically, you might be cycling while you're laughing.
So this healing practice is obviously a lot more of it takes place when you're not even working with a patient or person to be healed. It's a kind of a self, it's a personal practice largely.
Absolutely. So I learned this practice not thinking I was going to be a healer.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly I learned it because it sounded really cool. and people report anecdotally that they tend to get things in their list like seemingly more quickly than they would have otherwise, and in mm-hmm. strange ways and things mm-hmm. like that. So there was a sort of selfish motive to do it. But I mean, it's very interesting. Most people find making a list of things that they selfishly want actually very difficult. We don't normally do this type of activity in our daily life. So this technique and the research that goes with it, I think, have implications for people in the healing world, but also in many other disciplines or subsets of our life, such as psychology, personal development, sociology, the way we interact with others.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like, and yeah. We're coming to a close here. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's this method, which needs obviously to be studied a lot more, but the initial studies are very exciting when we hear about things like terminal cancer possibly being cured with this method. But it's also a bit of a paradigm buster in that a person who practices the method also enriches their own life just by taking part in the practice. Would you say that's correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
For our listeners, if they want to learn more about this method, you recently went to a conference. Is there a website for the conference and for Dr. Bengtson's methods? And which books would you recommend people take a look at?
Okay, great. I just was at the 31st Annual Conference for the Society for Scientific Exploration, mm-hmm. which is a great resource for people. You can look at that society at scientificexploration.org. They have two magazines. One is Edge Science Magazine, and the other is the Journal for Scientific Exploration. And you can get an online subscription for these organizations, and I would highly recommend that you do it. If you're interested in a research of anomalous and sort of edge occurrences in daily life. And these are people who are attempting to do this research scientifically.
Great.
Which I highly value. There's also an organization called the World Institute for Scientific Exploration, which is just opening up. And they have many branches of research into anomalous findings. And you can find that organization at instituteforscientificexploration.org. And Bengtson's, if you want to find out more about Bengtson, he has a website called bengtsonresearch.org, I think. Might be dot something else.
And Bengtson is Bengston, is that right? William Bengtson.
William Bengtson, yes. And he occasionally holds conferences where people can learn about his technique. And
that's awesome.
Okay. Yep.
Thank you so much, Emery. Thanks for being on the show. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back the third Monday of the month. That's August. And we'll post all those links Emery told you on the Facebook page. Thanks. Be well.